April 5th, 2013. It's the Drupalize Me podcast. Get craziness. Drupalize Me. Welcome. I am your host, Kyle Hoffmeyer. I am taking the chair for Addison. She is on vacation, so you're stuck with me. I apologize for that, but we're going to try to get through this smoothly. And before we get started, we've got some of our obvious announcements and events that we like to cover here on the Drupalize Me podcast. Let's go ahead and start with some announcements. We have a Git workshop. The Drupalize Me team, mainly Joe and Addie, are putting on a Git workshop at the Mini WebCon on April 16th in Minneapolis. So if you happen to be in the area, go ahead and check that out. We also have an announcement to let you guys know. Our real-world Drupal workshop at DrupalCon Portland is almost sold out. So if you want to see our happy smiles and listen to us talk about Drupal, hurry up and get your tickets for that. And let's cover some events. This weekend, the Drupal Camp in Stanford, California is going on. And then throughout the rest of April, we've got lots going on. I'm going to quickly just go through this. I'm sure I will be messing up some of the way you pronounce these places, but let's go for it. We have the Drupal Camp Sacramento, which is in Davis, California. We are, as in Drupalize.me, are a sponsor of this one, and we'll be doing a Drupalize.me account giveaway. So if you can make it out, that'd be awesome. The Front End United in the London, UK, as you will. Drupal Camp Dallas in Garland, Texas. Oh boy, here we go. Drupal Camp Ljubljana, yeah, and Slovenia. I apologize. We're also a sponsor of that one, where we're giving it away an account as well. Drupal Camp Poland, Wrocław, Poland. Sure. Drupal Camp Mexico in Puebla, Mexico. You have Drupal Camp Sao Paulo in Brazil. Drupal Camp Scotland in Glasgow. You have a Drupal Camp Florida in Orlando, where we're also a sponsor of that one, and we'll be doing an account giveaway. So if you're catching some rays in the Florida area, check that one out. Drupal Camp Business Developer Community Days in Singapore, Drupal Camp Chattanooga, Tennessee, and last but not least, the Linux Fest Northwest, where we're also a sponsor of that, and we'll be giving away account giveaway. As we said, this is going to be a podcast on some Git craziness, and I am here today with some other bots who are, I guess you could say, they're all Git masters. That's why they're here with us today on the podcast. To begin with, we have Joe, the conflict creator, Schindler.
Hey, how's it going?
We have Blake, Bisect Hall.
Howdy.
Jared, GitHub Bittner.
Yo.
And Brock, the merge master, Boland.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah, I was working on those all morning. I was like, "Hey, what could we do that would be so clever working with Git?" I didn't even do any actual work this morning. I sat there with a notepad thinking, "What could I do that would be really funny and clever?" That's the best I came up with. Sorry, but anyways, so we are here and we are going to talk about Git and what all the Git goodness has for us and how you spell it and where it came about and workflows and all that type of stuff. So I'm gonna toss over to you guys. I know Joe's probably going to give a little bit of backstory about this podcast and where it came about. Obviously, we just are doing a introduction to Git series on Drupalize Me, which we're wrapping up next week. So, Joe, go ahead and kick us off on this.
Yeah, just a little bit of sort of why we thought that this would be an awesome podcast. A couple months ago, when we sat down to record all the videos for this Git series that we're just wrapping up now on Drupalize Me, we were talking about how Git is a really flexible tool. All of this really cheap branching, the fact that it's distributed and so forth, makes it so that at the end of the day, it's kind of, you can have any workflow that you can imagine or any sort of process that you can come up with. And that's part of what makes Git challenging when working with teams of people. We wanted to record a lesson about it, but it was hard to figure out, like, what do we put in a video that demonstrates this is how you could potentially work with a team? So I thought it'd be more fun to have just a conversation about how all of us have used Git in the past, how we're using it currently, things that are working. You know, is working with GitHub a good option for managing a project that is more than just, you know, two people, or is it not? And that kind of thing. I think the biggest thing for me is just discussing methods that I've seen work in the past. Again, it's that, like, I can have a copy of the repository. GitHub can have a copy of the repository. Anybody can have a copy of the repository. We can all create our own branches. How do we work as a team in a way that makes sense for everyone?
And obviously, Joe, we start that off by distributing an excellent graphical user interface for everyone to use Git with, correct?
If that's what you're into. Yep.
Oh, right. Kyle.
Ah, man.
Well, you know, I mean, you have a point there, because I mean, some of the workflows from Git, especially if you're coming from something like Subversion, it's a lot easier to visualize if you are not working on the command line. Like, how does merging work? How does branching work? And all that just all those different workflows and things you can do with Git can, you know, do I merge? Do I rebase? What does that mean? You know, you can see those things in a UI much easier than, you know, oh, I need to use these commands. So
that's an interesting maybe thing to think about too, is something like Subversion or any centralized version control system. And like, one of the basic tenets of that system is you've got a central server that everybody's checking code into and getting code out of. In Git, you don't really have that because of the distributed repository system. One of the things that I've seen done a lot, and that I actually tend to really like, is even though you don't have to have that central repository, I think it works really well in most cases when projects do have some concept of like a blessed version of the repository. Like, this is the canonical source that should be considered the master copy of the repository from which everyone is cloning and so forth.
I think that's a difficult thing for people to get their head around when they first start using Git, if they're coming from another system like Subversion, because there are services like GitHub and Bitbucket that give you that centralized repository, but it's also distributed, or, you know, it's distributed and you can copy repositories from anybody without a centralized service like that. And I think that can be very confusing at first if you're not coming from a distributed version control system already. So yes, it is distributed. Everyone has their own copy. But the typical workflow is that, you know, the blessed copy is up on GitHub or something like that, and everyone kind of pushes and pulls from that repository.
Yeah, I think I found it intimidating at first because, you know, I came from working with Subversion a lot, and, you know, switched to Git, and the whole concept is like, there is no central repository. You can do whatever you want. And I would sit down and I'm like, I don't even know what to do. Ultimately, I find that we end up sort of emulating that centralized version control mantra a lot with most of the projects that I've worked on. But you still have all of the benefits of having a distributed system like Git, where it's, you know, you have the entire repository local, so branching is still really cheap. I can still make commits while I'm on a plane. But ultimately, we're all working from that central server and committing code there at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's like it picks the best parts. Like, you still have your centralized system that everyone works from, but you can, like you say, commit on a plane, which I have never done. That's always the use case that's cited. I find it much more useful just to have the option to have a local branch where I can be making commits that aren't going to affect anyone else's work until I'm sure it's ready to be pushed up to them.
And the other thing that's really nice about a distributed system like Git that I'm sure we all recognize but nobody really talks about much is that since your own checkout is a full repository, especially when you're getting a handle on how all these Git commands work, if you're someone like Kyle that's kind of new to the command line and a little bit scared of what some of the commands might be doing in the background, since it's your own repository, you can kind of experiment and play around with things like merges without destroying work for other people, which I know I've found really handy, especially when I was first starting working with Git. It was kind of fun to, you know, copy and paste some random stuff from blog posts and not be worried that I was going to ruin someone's weekend.
That is absolutely one of the best parts. And it's really nice, too, because if, you know, I've been helping some people who are new to Git who are kind of panicking, like, oh no, Steve deleted the master branch accidentally on GitHub, and we're all in trouble now. It's like, no, it's okay. You still have the master branch on your local. You can still push from your local because you have a full copy. It's almost like a redundant backup across every developer's machine.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a definite peace of mind, for me at least, with distributed version control systems. I was always, well, basically the number one reason I didn't contribute to Drupal.org was CVS. It was just such a pain to work with and interact with. I just didn't want to deal with it and didn't bother as a result. And having something like Git that's a little bit easier to work with makes that sort of contribution hurdle a little bit lower, I think. I mean, it's weird to say that because Git's still definitely kind of hard to use, right? Especially if you're not really comfortable on the command line or have found a GUI tool you like. But I think just the distributed nature of it really opens up development options to a lot more people than the centralized model.
Okay, so here's the question then. In this world of distributed version control where it's sort of like anything flies, I can do whatever I want with my copy of the repository, I can make as many copies of it as I want to, and so forth. How do you go about imposing some kind of structure that works for a team? Like, most of the time, you probably don't want people just kind of committing code willy-nilly to the branch that is eventually going to become the release on your production server. Or maybe you want control over who's committing things to, you know, the staging or QA servers or environments. What are some strategies that you guys have seen used in order to work with teams of people in that scenario?
Well, it might be a little easier to start from like simple and work to big.
Yeah.
I'm thinking like, so, I mean, when you're first learning how to do it, you probably are a little afraid to be working with other people just because, you know, you're still learning the ropes and how it goes. So, I mean, one of the biggest ways to start learning is to, you know, use something like GitHub or Bitbucket or some service like that to create your first repository and go through the instructions that it has on, you know, how to get installed, how to clone that repository, and then just start messing with it. And I've seen a lot of people who use, you know, services like this for personal projects, or, you know, maybe they're the only developer on a website, or it's a personal website, things like that. And, you know, it's really simple to use at that point, because basically all you're doing is you're making changes to your files, you save those changes, and you push those changes. And saving is, well, I guess when I say saving, I mean you're saving it in your file editor, right? But then you also need to save that change to Git, which is committing it to your repository. And then you push those changes to wherever your remote repository is. And that's probably the simplest workflow that you can use and start experimenting with.
I think the other reason that's a really great idea is the documentation on GitHub.com is really, really solid and a really great resource for people that are kind of just getting going. And ultimately what you wind up with when you follow that advice or that approach is you basically have your one centralized server. It's just GitHub or Bitbucket or whatever service you kind of happen to be using. And I think it's kind of interesting to look at how our Git usage on the various different projects Lullabot's involved with has evolved over time as well. Because I think when we first started using it, part of it was a limitation in our project management tool, I think. But I think a lot of projects, we do just use that sort of centralized, this is the repository that something like Jenkins pulls from to update the various different servers. This is sort of the one blessed repository. And as we've gotten a little more sophisticated in our use of it, I think we've moved more towards some of the pull request kind of workflows that GitHub supports. It doesn't mean that we don't still have that one blessed repository, but I feel like there are more changes flying back and forth between people's individual forks than there used to be even 6 months ago.
Yeah, and so after that, if you want to get a little more complicated, the workflow that Blake mentioned, we still use that sometimes. I mean, if it's a real small change, like, you know, a spelling correction, or it's just nothing that's really going to affect anybody else, you know, you can kind of make those calls where you're just like, I'm just going to commit it to master. And it's, you know, it's really not too big of a deal. We're fairly loose on a lot of our projects that way. It's really when you want somebody else to, like, look at this before it goes into the blessed place, usually something like master or something. You know, you end up using something like a pull request workflow. You know, you create your own branch. You push that branch up, create a pull request, which things like GitHub and Bitbucket make it really nice to review that code. And, you know, then it gets reviewed, and then you can put it into master, into the blessed place. So
what you're describing there, then, is a workflow where, like, rather than I make a copy of the repository, make my changes and commit them to master, every time I'm starting to add a new feature or fix a bug, I'm going to create a branch. And then I'll do my work in that branch, and I'll push my copy of that branch to the sort of blessed or canonical repository, or somewhere that it's accessible to other people on my team. And then somebody else gets the opportunity to take a look at the code that I've added to that branch and review it and verify that it does what I say it does and that everything looks appropriate. And ultimately, they can merge that code into the master branch or whatever is considered sort of your, like, main line of work branch. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we do something really similar to that with Drupalize Me. We don't have the pull request system just because where we're hosting our repository doesn't support the same pull request integration that, like, GitHub does. But we do. Everybody creates a branch for whatever work they're doing. Generally, it ends up being like one branch per ticket that you're working on, or like one branch per task. You create a branch, you push that up, you can then resolve the ticket and say, hey, I think that I've got a solution to this. Would somebody review this? It's a lot like submitting a patch to Drupal.org and saying, this is, you know, ready for review. Mm-hmm. And then somebody else will take a look at that. The way that we do it, we've got the concept of like a release manager. Basically, Addison, anytime somebody resolves a ticket, she checks out a copy of your branch, reviews the code that's in it, and if she's happy with those changes, she'll merge that code into master. At the end of the day, there isn't anything in place that says, like, stops me or anybody else from committing code to master, other than we've just, like, documented and sort of dictated that this is the workflow that we're going to follow. It ends up working pretty well.
It's your convention, basically.
Yeah.
You make a good point with that, though, Joe. I don't know, in terms of permissions, is there a way in Git to prevent or to limit the people who can commit to master? I'm not even sure if that's an option. There is. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know that you can do that, like, out of the box in things like GitHub and stuff. But I mean, before GitHub and Bitbucket, how Git worked was you had a centralized server and that served out the main repository, you know, through SSH. It would create those. It would open those up so that you can connect to those ports in order to actually copy those files through Git. And that server can be controlled on a pretty finite level when it comes to permissions and things. So, for example, Drupal.org, you can clone core, but you can't commit back to it. It will not let you. It'll give you an error message. Same way with a lot of the different modules. You have to have certain permissions to those repositories in order to have commit access. So there's definitely ways you can get even more fine-grained where it's like nobody can commit to master, but you could probably push up a branch or something like that.
There's definitely tools that make that possible, like that idea of saying only, you know, this particular user or this set of users has permission to commit code or merge code into this defined branch. In my experience, in most cases, it's worked out just fine to say, to not necessarily set up all of that extra overhead for ensuring that nobody else can commit code, but just to document it and say, this is the policy that we have. This is why we have it. Everybody's expected to follow it. It's also really nice sometimes. You know, we've got a small team working on Drupalize Me. At any given time, you know, at most we have like half a dozen people working on it. And it's nice to say if somebody's on vacation for a week and we still want to commit code, or we need to make a release to the production server, I can do that. Like, there's nothing blocking my user from doing it. It's just a matter of, we set up these expectations and people are expected to follow the rule, if you will. But we don't have code in place to enforce it.
I think it's probably a little bit of a hack, but one of the easiest ways you could probably go about doing something like that, if you really needed to, since it's so cheap and easy to add remotes, is to just add a remote on your own private machine somewhere, or have something similar, right? So you're the only one that physically has access to push to a particular remote, rather than any fancy post-commit hooks or something like that. But yeah, I'm definitely with you guys. I think it's more a social process question and a team workflow issue than a technical challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose if you don't trust people on your team to commit to master, maybe they aren't the right people for your team.
Well, I don't know that I'd say that. I think it would be more that I would say that I think if you would, I kind of run into this sometimes when, you know, on different projects that we do, where maybe somebody's code, it's a new team member or something, is not quite up to standards. You know, maybe we have somebody on a client side or something, and they're not quite familiar with Drupal coding standards or something like that. And you might just say, okay, we're gonna kind of instate a pull request policy so that somebody is reviewing the code. And then, you know, you can't really say, oh, only you have to do pull requests because your code sucks. You know, it's something where you're just like, well, you know, it's probably going to help everybody if we have a peer review system in place. And it typically does wonders for a project to have it in place right away anyway. I mean, at the very beginning, when you're just committing Drupal and a base theme and stuff like that, you know, you don't really need a whole, you know, there's some overhead involved with a pull request workflow, but, you know, we tend to say, use your judgment, you know, do you really want somebody to look at this before it goes in? And that seems to work pretty good.
You know, I'm on the side of like, I've been working with Drupal for years and oftentimes I'm like, oh yeah, I totally know what I'm doing. But I tend to err on the side of, I would like someone else to look at this. and I really love the pull request-based workflow, or even just that whole thing of committing to your own branch and having somebody else ultimately merge your changes into the master branch. Even if you're not doing like this single person can make the change, like merge the changes, it's nice to have somebody else look at it and merge those changes, because they might catch something like, did you leave a debug statement in your code? Should you have commented something that you didn't? Did you install some module to test things out and commit the code for it, but then never remove the module that you're now not using? It's really easy to make silly mistakes like that, and it's super nice to have somebody else point that out and say, oh, hey, I don't think you intended to do this. And you're like, oh, yeah, you're right. I totally missed that. Thanks.
That happens a lot.
It's also can get frustrating sometimes when you like you create a branch and you submit your code and then it sits there for 4 or 5 days waiting for somebody else to review it, and you're pinging people in IRC and you're like, hey, can you review it? Can you review it? And they're like, oh, I'm busy with my own thing right now. Mm-hmm. But I think when you can make it work, it's definitely a best practice scenario.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes even just having someone give it a quick once over is better than having no review, because, you know, sometimes someone can just skim the changes you've made and spot stuff like, this function doesn't have a comment, this module has been added, but I don't know why. That kind of stuff you mentioned, where it's just the little things that are easy to overlook when you commit mm-hmm. a bunch of code.
It's also a peace of mind thing. I mean, it's shared responsibility. You're not the sole developer responsible for this code working or breaking things. So if somebody else is there to share that responsibility with you, number one, you feel better about committing it. You're going to look at your stuff a little bit more because you know somebody's going to be looking at it. And then you also have that shared responsibility where somebody else is working on it and there's less likelihood of it breaking. But it also, I've found, tends to enhance the team's communication. and their camaraderie because of the communication going back and forth. You know, if one person's committing bugs all the time and another person's always reviewing these things and being like, oh, gosh, you know, there's always bugs in your stuff. You know, you really got to step up your game and, you know, maybe I can help you. Also, just the fact that they learn stuff, you know, if you have a new team member who's committing things and they have to get somebody else to review it, they may have just made an honest mistake that they didn't know about, and the reviewer knows, you know, maybe a better method to do that, a different technique. And so the whole team tends to, what's the word, adhere, I guess, a little bit closer when you put these kind of workflows in place.
And if all else fails, Git was very polite to put in a blame feature. That's what's always scared me. I don't want everyone to put the word blame next to my name.
If it makes you feel better, about 75% of the time that you do a Git blame, it turns out you're the one who screwed up the code in the first place. So
yeah.
It's unlikely that someone else is going to blame you. They're just going to find it was their own mistake.
So true. I think there's a lot of credit to what Jared is saying, though, just about like instituting one of these workflows in the first place, and opening the doors for people to communicate about the code that they're committing makes it a lot easier for me to have conversations with other people on the team about the code. And it sucks when you're in a scenario where you're not talking with other people about the code that's getting committed, and you get all the emails that come in and notify you like, this just happened. And you're like, oh man, I really wish that module didn't get committed, or, you know, oh, there's an obvious security flaw in this. And I should, you know, speak up and say something. And it's a lot easier to do that when I'm already like in that kind of comfortable zone of having conversations with people rather than, I'm being the jerk all the time who's the only person that says anything. And I'm like, Oh, that's wrong.
That is a really good point.
For me, it's really nice to sort of to help feel like I have my head more around the entire project. You know, a lot of times you'll be working on a new feature and you kind of have your head down on that new feature for a week or two. But if you're working with pull requests and sort of an active participant in that sort of process, you can kind of see what other people are doing. And a lot of times for me, it helps make me feel like I'm still seeing the forest and not getting too caught up on my one little corner.
Yeah, we have a situation right now where we have another team working on some code, and they actually, because of their firewalls, don't actually have access to push directly to GitHub. And so they end up kind of giving a drop on a nightly basis of some code. And even that is just, it's so hard, like, because it's really easy to review a pull request that has, you know, maybe one committed module and, you know, a little bit of custom code to modify a feature or something like that, or, you know, a little bit of CSS that affects one page or something like that. But if you get like a daily code drop from five other developers who are working on stuff, like, you just,
and it's like the combination of everything that those five people did that day.
Exactly. Like, it takes you a day to review it. So it doesn't work on a big massive scale like that. And, as a result, there's really a tough communication barrier in place, and we've tried various ways, but for some reason their company just blocks those ports. So I don't know what to do about it.
I think that's another reason that like the whole sort of feature branch based workflow can be really, really nice, is you've got a like, even if you have five people working on five different features at the same time, if you can contain each of those things into their own branch, it makes it a lot easier for someone to review the code rather than that scenario where I'm asking Kyle to review all of the code that I wrote over the last 3 days. And it's, you know, some of it's related to this ticket and some of it's related to that ticket and some of it's brand new stuff that he knows nothing about. It's so much harder for someone to review that without context.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed that my personal work when it comes to to Git has actually changed quite a bit. Interacting with a centralized system like Subversion or something, there was always that sort of scary moment of, oh, I have to update before I commit this because I'm out of date, and oh man, 15,000 commits are coming in, and is it going to break my stuff? And there's sort of that big apprehension around, oh, I might lose the work I just did, when it comes to having to interact with that master repository. And having your own repository, because Git's distributed, I think as a byproduct has made me commit much more atomically, and has also made sort of my commit messages and the use of feature branches that much better. It's sort of weird that the tool has kind of enforced best practices like that, but it's definitely kind of a neat little side effect.
Okay, so now we've got this workflow where all the developers on the team are, you know, cloning a copy of the repository, making their branches to do some work, and submitting that code back. And either some branch manager is merging the code, or there's the pull request, and you click the magic button on GitHub, and the code gets merged. You're merging all of this code into master, into a different branch, maybe like separate branches. Like I think a common one is the master branch being reserved for, this is code that is production ready, and I'm ready to release this on the world. And having a branch like a development branch that is, this is stuff that we're currently working on. Maybe we'd like the content of the development branch to be deployed out to a testing server so that, you know, we can show it to the boss and they can say, yeah, that's really neat, or oh man, you guys need to work on that. Once you've got the code into these respective branches through whatever process it is, how do you get that deployed to environments? How do you set up a server that, you know, the general public can see your actual website, like maybe a QA or a testing server? What are some strategies for that you guys have seen?
I've seen a lot of different ones, and they all work to varying degrees. A lot of times the big factor is QA. If you can have a QA team who is part of your team and actually working along with you, and you know they're able to do things like, in one workflow for a particular client, we have a setup where every single pull request actually creates its own environment in Drupal. So it goes out, it creates an environment with the stable branch, and then it applies this pull request dynamically to the feature so that somebody could actually go to the environment, click around, and make sure that it's working. Something like that is very quick and easy to say, okay, this is working, let's merge it into the stable, let's tag a release, and you know, boom, it's up on the production site. We've had other projects though that, you know, the QA team is not maybe able to work that way, and so things become staggered and they end up kind of reviewing a lot of stuff at one time rather than, you know, just on a pull request basis. They end up having to review a lot of things, and that it creates complications in a lot of different areas, but it can work. It's just a little more maintenance in your Git branches.
Well, that's interesting. It's not unlike what we were talking about earlier, where it's really hard for me to review an entire day's worth of Blake's code that's from multiple different things that he's working on. You know, it's hard for a QA team to really focus in and do quality assurance on the one thing that you're asking them to if they're spread out over a bunch of different things, really. In that scenario where you're like doing one big code dump on QA, and all of a sudden you're like, yep, there's five different things in here that are all kind of related but not related at all. Can you make sure that they're working? It's a lot harder than, can you go and make sure that this thing is the color green that it's supposed to be? One of the things that I've encountered working on Drupalize Me and kind of the way that we do stuff, like deploying to our QA server, and currently it's all done manually. When we're ready to make a deployment to QA, it's kind of like it's the end of a sprint. Someone's gone through and done a review of the code and merged all the code into a development branch. And then we do a manual, you know, log into the server, do a git pull, get the latest code in the development branch, and then tell everybody else, okay, it's ready to go. And I think that works pretty well, especially with a small team. One of the things that I've encountered on other projects, though, that I really like is systems that attempt to automate a lot of that. I think that anytime you can automate that deployment process, the scenario of like having your development server or having your production server, you know, automatically pull in code from the development branch and effectively deploy it, you get repeatability. You don't have to worry about making sure that someone remembered to like merge in the latest commit that was made in the development branch and so forth. So I've always really liked whenever that stuff can be automated, I try and do so.
And along with that is I do a lot of thinking about this kind of stuff, like how to automate these processes and what things should go into them. And one of the things is automated testing as well. Being able to write those tests and then have, you know, when you do some sort of build, say it's a pull request environment or it's a, you know, a release candidate directly to QA or something, that you have tests in place that could automatically be run as, you know, regression tests. That is really an attractive process as well, because you have this automated thing happening that's checking your code every time you release something new, and you don't have to do anything manual, and it's just, it's beautiful and it's wonderful, and I wish every project we could do that on, but it's very time consuming just even to set up those systems.
Okay, so I kind of feel like we've covered a lot of ground here. We've talked about just the fact that Git is super flexible. We've talked about some strategies for working on Git projects by yourself, some strategies for working on projects with a team. We even talked a little bit about like deployment type of things. What do you guys think are some good resources for people that want to learn more about working with Git in a team scenario?
Drupalize me.
Yeah, besides the obvious, our introduction to Git series.
One thing that I've seen that I really like is there's a pretty famous article on using Git and branching, and it's this workflow aptly named Git Flow. It's on nvie.com. We can post a link to it. That's a pretty interesting read just about the concept of using branches and a really pretty common workflow that I think is similar to a lot of what we've been talking about. So that's something that people could read up on.
I was actually searching for the same article, and I was looking at it while you were talking and shocked to realize that it's over 3 years old already. Mm-hmm. It seems like it should be more recent than that. But yeah, that's definitely a classic. Another thing I like, it's not so much about working with teams, but just kind of Git specific in general, is the Pro Git book. It's available at progit.org/book. But it's online, it's free, it gets into the really nitty-gritty details about how objects are stored in a Git repository and all the crazy kind of computer science principles behind how it functions and how it's so fast, which if you're into that sort of thing is pretty fun to read about.
And if you're brand new to Git, there is a sort of a tutorial on GitHub at try.github.com. I think it was put together by Code School, but it's sort of an interactive tutorial. So they tell you this is what you should type in and what it's going to do. I don't know how much it gets into working with a team, but if you're brand new to Git, that's probably a good place to start to at least get a sense of what is happening before you can really get into the nitty gritty.
There's another article regarding like the NVIE workflow, Git flow, and just, you know, working in a team and release management and stuff. GitHub did a post on how they release code, and it's actually a little bit different than the NVIE way of doing things. It's really interesting, and I can't seem to find the link right now, but we'll make sure that that's in the links too.
Well, cool. I guess this is where I'm supposed to come in, you know, and say, hey, let's start wrapping this up. I think we covered tons of good stuff, and we provided a lot of help for people. I thought like my great intro with your classy middle names, I was trying to figure out a way to finalize this stuff, and I thought, well, maybe we could do some bad Git jokes. You know, everyone's like, you get with it stuff. The problem is with Git jokes is everybody has their own version. Boo-doo. No?
That wow. actually took me a second.
I actually did steal that. I Googled Git jokes, and it was the first one that came up. So I am not clever enough to come up with something like that. But
hey, Kyle, maybe we should just get this podcast done.
There.
Yes.
So I'm just going to like wrap things up. I would say that my experience working with teams of people on any project that's using Git, the best possible thing that you can do for your team is agree on a workflow and document it. And make sure that everybody on the team knows what that workflow is and that it's written down so that when new people come onto the team, you can sort of point them at the documentation and say, on this project, this is how we get things done. Because there's nothing more frustrating than coming into like a new project and with Git where I can do whatever I want and I start working along and I do my own thing and somebody's like, oh, you're doing it wrong. I'm like, well, nobody told me in the first place that you had a policy in place. So that would be my advice. Agree on something and document it.
And if you want to get really nerdy, put that documentation in Git so that everyone can, you know, modify it.
Everything goes in Git.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, that I had fun. I'm sure that joke ruined my chance of ever hosting a Drupalize Me podcast again, but I'm sure Addison needs to take more than one vacation. She needs to take more than one vacation a year, so I'm sure there's probably a chance I'm going to be doing this again. So, you know, if you guys are looking to get a hold of us, you want to book us for your events, you just want to chat, you want to see what we're up to, you can always find us on Facebook at facebook.com/DrupalizeMe. We're also tweeting on the Twitter at twitter.com/DrupalizeMe. And if you just want to drop us a line, you got some suggestions, you just want to talk about our podcast or all the cool stuff we're working on, or you just want to say hi, you can always go to drupalize.me/contact. I'd like to thank you guys, and that's I don't have like a way of going out. I'm not going to tell people to stay classy or anything like that. I'm just going to thank everybody for joining us. So thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Ta-da!